So my sister-in-law tells a story about a guy in her office. This goes back a few years. A guy they nickname Spulika. You see, like most offices, they had a little coffee area. And I don't know about your office, but some coffee areas don't supply those little tiny plastic straws that you use to stir your coffee. What they had in their office was a community spoon. You know, you stir your coffee and you set it back down. Time and time again, they would see this guy pouring his coffee, adding some cream and sugar, stirring it with the community spoon, and then licking the spoon. Spoonlicka! Mad. Money Machine. Show 108. The end of April. Hi guys, this is Paul Douglas Boyer, Madman Machine Show 108. Thank you for joining me. Thanks for downloading the show to your iPod, to your computer, or to your Zune, perhaps. Well, I've wondered, why do people put the sugar and cream in after they pour the coffee? It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. Why don't you put the sugar and cream in first, then pour the coffee? Because then you don't need to stir it. And then you won't have the Spulika problem! At least Starbucks has these long wooden stirrers. You know, they look like long popsicle sticks. Does that feel weird putting that in your coffee? Next time you use one of those things, lick the end of it and then put it back with the rest of them. And what about these coffee carafes with that huge opening on top that sit on this burner all day long? By the end of the day, you've got this mud in the bottom of the thing. Who thought up this thing? I mean, you can actually stand there and watch the water vapor evaporating from the coffee. It's ridiculous. So I did go into Starbucks the other day, and they're changing things up. You know, their cups, they don't have that green logo on it right now. They've got this brown logo. And they've got a new roast, the Pike Place roast. Coffee for people who love coffee, they say. I guess it's a smoother coffee. Maybe they're trying to compete head-on with Dunkin' Donuts smooth coffee. It still costs $2. How about a cup of coffee for 50 cents and put it in a plain white cup?
Two things in life I know. Music and coffee beans. I'm a coffee man, I know all about the coffee beans. I'm a coffee man, I know all about the coffee beans. I bring excitement to the music scene like a heaping cup of pure caffeine. Cause I'm a coffee man, I know about the coffee beans.
The Mad Money Machine is so very proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Check them out on the web at ifa.com and take their risk capacity survey. There are three types of risk capacity surveys. There's the quick one. It's only 5 questions long. There's the complete one. It's 25 questions long. And there is one that's 19 questions long for 401k plans. These are your company-sponsored retirement plans. Now, if we take the quick risk capacity survey, 5 questions long, here's the first question. Basically, it asks you, within how many years will you need to withdraw a total of 20% of all of your investments? And there's 5 possible answers. Less than 2 years, between 2 and 5, between 5 and 7, between 7 and 10, or more than 10 years. And the next question, question 2, simply asks, what's the current value of your long-term investments? Include everything. Less than 25,000, between 25 and 50, between 51 and 100, between 101 and 250, or more than 250. Question 3, what's your total income? Same answers. Question 4 shows you a dynamic chart which shows how risk and return are generally tied together. And then it asks you to choose one of five answers. What is the worst 12-month percentage loss you would tolerate for your long-term investments, beyond which you would be inclined to sell some or all of your investment? 35% loss, 28% loss, 20% loss, 13% loss, or 5% loss? And the final question in the quick risk capacity survey simply asks, how would you rate your knowledge about investing in general, and more specifically, the relationship between risk, return, and time as shown in this chart? Well, you'll have to look at the chart. Is your knowledge significantly below average? Below average, average, above average, or expert? Well, if you've been listening to the show, hopefully by now you're becoming expert, but take the risk capacity survey, look at the chart for yourself, and see. Answer the five questions, and you're well on your way to financial freedom. Well, I just saw John Bogle. He was on CNBC with several other people. And he was saying, you know, right now doesn't seem like it's a very good time to be selling stocks, nor would I be a buyer of stocks. Well, the fourth month is about the fourth step in the 12-step program for active investors. The fourth step is time pickers. And you know that in 1993, there was a study performed by SEI Corporation, and they looked at the 10-year period in stocks between 1980 and 1989, and they said that the 40 days, out of that 10-year period, just 40 days, with the biggest stock gains, accounted for 88% of the total gain over that 10-year period. And you think you can pick out which 40 days over the next 10 years are going to be the ones that account for the 88% of the gains in those 10 years? Abby Joseph Cohen was also on the show with Jack Bogle. Even though financial academics widely accept the concept of market efficiency, Wall Street firms like the ones these people work for continue to pander their market timing predictions through their approved gurus. Their strategy is to encourage their clients to trade more, even though academics conclude that trading is hazardous to the client's wealth. These Pied Pipers of Wall Street do not have a good batting average. No Babe Ruths there. You see, SmartMoney.com has been tracking these pundits dating back to 1997. Abby Joseph Cohen's batting average, 0.128. I'm afraid nobody has a crystal ball. The best you can do is take the risk capacity survey and then invest according to your capacity for risk. Let's try this. What percentage of accuracy must you have if you're a time picker in order to be successful? 60%, 40%, 70%, or 30%? Well, in order to be successful, you need 70% accuracy in order to be a time picker. How about this one? Who was the only successful time picker ever recorded? A. John Bogle. B. William Sharp. C. Well, there are hundreds of successful time pickers. What are you talking about? Or D. There are no successful time pickers. The answer? D. There are no successful time pickers. Third question. Listen carefully. The S&P 500 index produced an annualized return of 17.5% in the 1980s. All right, so a $10,000 investment that stayed fully invested throughout the entire decade, $10,000 grew to more than $50,000. All right, now, what would the end value be if an investor had missed those best 40 trading days? A, a 12.6% return, or $32,000. B, a 9.3% return, or $24,000. C, 6.5% return, or $18,000. Or D, 3.9% return, instead of the 17.5%, remember, or $14,000 on your $10,000 investment. Over 10 years, the answer is, unfortunately, D, 3.9% return, or just $14,000, a $4,000 gain after 10 years by missing the best 40 trading days. And a fourth question I'll ask you then is, the best lesson to learn from market timing pundits is, A, time pickers have no way of predicting the market and therefore are valueless. B, be choosy when selecting time pickers and research their records thoroughly. C, companies do not report their earnings on a timely basis. Well, the answer, of course, is A. All this prognostication by all these people you see on TV, that you read on the web, that you see in the magazines, that you read in the newspapers, is completely valueless. Set it and forget it, my friends.
So this is a song about how it feels to write software for a living. It's called Code Monkey.
Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say, Code Monkey, very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code Monkey not say it out loud. Code Monkey not crazy, just proud. And Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey, very simple man, big, warm, fuzzy, secret heart. Code Monkey like you.
That's Jonathan Colton with Code Monkey. I'll have a link to that song and all of the music played on this show in the show notes of this show, show number 108. Yeah, I used to be a code monkey, and you know, being a code monkey can be fun at times. The challenge of solving puzzles in which you get your program running and it runs right, it's just this feeling of euphoria. But then there's all the constant drudgery, like he said, of rewriting the login page, and then you've got to rewrite it in some new language, and you've got to write it in some new architecture, and oh, and then when it doesn't work, man, it really stinks to be a code monkey. Compare being a code monkey to something simple like, I don't know, a truck driver? Same truck, same route, get the boxes on, get the boxes off, go home at night, contribute to your 401k plan. And you could listen to podcasts while you drive.
There's ash in the pages. Now I've got myself lost. I was writing to tell you that my feelings tonight are a stain on my notebook that brings your goodbye.
Imagine now that you're 65 years old and you are at your retirement party and your boss hands you two envelopes. He says, you can pick one of these, envelope A and envelope B. You get to open them both and look inside and you get to pick the one that you want. Envelope A has a financial statement in it from your 401k plan that says you have $1.244 million in your 401k plan. You say, all right, that's a nice financial statement. You open envelope B, and envelope B is also a financial statement from a 401k plan, but it says you only have $766,000. Your boss says, you can choose which one of these financial statements you want to have right now. Which one would you take? Well, I guess you'd be a fool to take envelope B, right?
Envelope A says your financial plan has just about a $500,000 more dollars in it. Well, friends, it's not an imaginary scenario. Consider now these two 401k plans, in which a worker invests $3,000 annually. Plan A is run according to stringent fiduciary principles and earns 7.5% annually. Plan B, though, is operated by conflicted, sales-driven entities and only earns 6% annually, even though both plans had employees contribute the same amount and took the same investment risk. If you picked Plan B, you must work an additional 7 years to make up for the lack of fiduciary oversight in that plan. Yeah, you see what the problem is now is some 401k plans are eating your money like a cancer. There are hidden fees inside these plans in which the plan sponsor sucks out some of your money every year. There was a written testimony by Matthew Hutchison, an independent pension fiduciary, given to the Committee on Education and Labor in the U.S. House of Representatives last year. He says, the SEC estimates that 1% of the average fund's investment return disappears each year due to brokerage expense, execution costs, and transaction spreads. Other industry sources indicate that an additional 0.5% slips away via revenue sharing payments. The impact on the average American is profound, and I would add, sad. You can read more about the, there's a bill happening in Congress now, House Resolution 3185, the 401k Fair Disclosure for Retirement Security Act. Read more about that by going to IFA.com, looking for it on the right side of the page. You know, there's about 50 million workers that have 401k style plans. The median account balance in these plans is about $23,000. Now, for most retirees, that's not enough to finance a single year of retirement. People who thought they were going to retire on the value of their homes are in for a rude awakening. At a committee meeting last year, the GAO testified about the problems posed by hidden 401k fees. Under current law, weak disclosure requirements mean that workers lack critical information about the fees they're paying. According to the testimony, because of weak disclosure requirements, 80% of workers did not know that fees were being taken out of their accounts. Some of these fees may be reasonable and necessary, but 401k plan participants, the customers, should be able to make that judgment for themselves, don't you think? The negative consequences of some of these hidden fees can be significant. A 1 percentage point increase in fees would cut retirement income by almost 20% after 20 years and 30% after 30 years. Now, how hard do you work being a code monkey to make the money that you make in a year? And how hard would it be to check up on your 401k plan to make sure you're not getting ripped off? If you don't do that, you deserve what you don't get. Of course, there's another thing you can do. If you have left an employer and left behind the 401k plan, if your money's still in that old 401k plan, my goodness gracious, transfer that out into an IRA and self-direct it into funds that are low expense. And of course, the best place to get your IRA is with IFA, Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. You've got some old 401k plan laying around. Oh, what a fantastic opportunity it would be to roll that in to an index funds advisor's account.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 4, time pickers. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. I've tried all the market timing systems, and I just can't figure it out. It's madness. Can't anyone tell me when to get in and out of stocks? Sure they can, I keep telling myself. I see your crooked glance. I've got to get back in the black soon. My portfolio is bleeding. I'm going to scream.
When I look at this, I just can't figure it out. I tried all of these methods to see your madness. I don't think that I can't see the crooked glance you're giving me. And all I tell myself are the same damn lies. And you said, don't scream, it'll take some time, but I'll get by, I believe. From all the times I wondered why, I don't need another chance to think you'd try. To scream, it'll take some time, yeah.
Time pickers, also known as market timers, believe they can predict the future direction of the market. But time pickers are fooled by randomness in the market. Academic studies prove that time picking doesn't work. Gains and losses are impossible to identify in advance. To add insult to injury, time pickers pay more taxes. If you or your investment advisor ever say the phrase, "Now might be a good time to invest in," we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home.
Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me? Rescue me?
So I got an email from Amazon the other day saying, hey, because you bought an HD DVD player from us, you remember I told you I bought that add-on to the Xbox, the HD DVD player. I think I paid $120, $150 for it. Well, Amazon says, we're going to refund you $50 since they've stopped making HD DVDs. And you can use the $50 to buy stuff from Amazon. Wow, that's pretty cool. You know, this I would have probably deleted that email without, if I hadn't read it closely. So check your spam folder or check your Amazon account. If you've bought a HD DVD drive like this, they may be giving you $50 back. So what did I spend my $50 on? Well, I bought three books. I bought one by Craig Carman called The Biography of the Dollar: How the Mighty Buck Conquered the World and Why It's Under Siege. And I also bought a book that's just released called The Revolution, A Manifesto by Ron Paul. And I bought another book, which I, you know, just like eating right or exercising properly or disciplining yourself to do something, I think I'm going to have some discipline to read this one, but it's called Human Action, A Treatise on Economics by Ludwig von Mises. This is the one of the gold standard books on Austrian economics, which Peter Schiff says calling it Austrian economics is like calling it Chinese physics. It's just physics, and it's just economics. So that should occupy a couple hours of my time coming up, when I get those books at least. I guess it'll be a little shorter show today. Today's our 15th anniversary. We're going to go out to eat tonight, so I'll wrap this show up for this week. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes a coffee mess to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next Friday. Please visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors, and sign up with an account with them. Let them handle your financial freedom. Visit them on the web at ifa.com. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com, which I guess is now mevo.com. I'd appreciate all feedback from you to my email address at feedback@madmoneymachine.com, or call the voicemail line 206-734-4763. Leave a comment out at the website madmoneymachine.com and see me at Twitter/madmoneymachine. Stay invested, everybody.